One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Baby on the Brain, The Returners, a podcast brought to you by Stylist magazine, dedicated to the big life questions you face when you're a new parent navigating a return to work. My name is Fliss, I'm the digital content director at Stylist and I'm 9 months into my return to work after 10 months of maternity leave. Every week I'm joined by a different co-host and today is a special episode. It's the Stylist Staff Special. What better way to talk about some of the different ways people return to work than looking at our stylist team of returners? Joining me as co-host today is Stylist's editor-in-chief, my boss, and mother of three, Lisa Smazarski. And we're going to talk to two stylist staffers about their return to work, how it made them feel, the highs, the lows, the best advice they ever received, and maybe the worst.
Hi, Fliss.
Thank you. This is very strange.
Yes, thanks for having me on your podcast eventually.
Okay, I
did it last time. Thank you.
You did. Season one, you were there.
I was.
So, kicking off, what did your return to work look like?
So, well, I guess I've done it three times. My first child, I went back at about 7 months. Mm-hmm. I was going to say she, definitely a he. He was 7 months.
It was a while ago.
And I went back 4 days a week and I went back in like a whirlwind. In fact, when we have Alex Walker on here later, she was there, so she could probably testify for this. Because I just felt I was very protective. Stylist had not been going for very long when I inconveniently got pregnant and went on mat leave. And I just felt like I had so much to do and was just so excited to get back, to be honest. I really, really was keen. It felt like another child to me, really. And I had the most phenomenal year, but I completely overcompensated, like really to the point where all I did was work or run home, look after babies who were awake in the night.
Yeah.
And then get up and go back to work. I mean, it was really full on. We were lucky that I had my mother-in-law there helping out. That did make it a lot easier, yeah. I have to say. But yeah, I worked a lot. I worked on my day off.
Oh God.
You know, as people do, don't they? Because you're like, I felt like I was overcompensating, if I'm really honest. I felt a bit out of sorts and like maybe I needed to prove myself.
And I think that's probably really normal for, especially the first time round.
Exactly, because actually by the third time, I really didn't feel that.
You were relaxing.
Oh my God, I was so relaxed, just wandered in. No, you know what? I think anyone returning to work feels like they have something to prove.
Yeah.
You feel out of touch, you want to prove you still got it, whatever the mythical it is. But I did take the pressure off, but it took me three goes to do that. So I'm not going to say it's a walk in the park.
That's some strong advice there.
And a lot of self-chat going on in between. Yeah, and the thing is, I think probably what I did learn first, second time was I can still do it.
Yeah.
Like, I was still me, fundamentally still me. I had the same abilities, the same talents. Yeah, I had a little catching up to do on the bits I'd missed out on. But fundamentally, I was always going to be really invested in my career and hopefully good at what I do. Yeah. And, you know, and actually taking the pressure off definitely made it easier to come back to work that third time.
Yeah. And did anyone give you any advice? Because I think when I look back at when I was returning, and I've only been back for 10 months, but I was desperate for someone to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And that's actually, you helped me a lot with that, and we'll talk about that later. But like turning to someone or having someone say, have you thought about doing this? Just seems helpful.
Yeah, I felt like I was in a bit of a unique situation in my NCT group. So I didn't really feel like I had the peer support that probably I wanted. Primarily, they are a brilliant group of people, but no one was going back to work at the same time.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was navigating it. I was also the first person in the company at the time to take maternity leave and come back. So I didn't really have any examples or role models, I guess, within the company to look at. But I did get some good advice, and it was actually from our CEO at the time, a guy called Mike Suter, and he had children quite young. He was 24, worked at FHM at the time. So you can imagine having to go home at 6 o'clock to look after your child is a little bit anti-culture. Yeah. But he said to me, it's not your fault, it's not your kid's fault, it's the time's fault. Time ran out and you got to go. And he was like, never ever apologise for getting up and leaving to do what you need to do. And I have to say that was the most incredible advice I could have been given, because exactly what I felt was guilty for getting up and going home, because I'd traditionally been the person who would sit there and wait till the rest of my team had gone home. Yeah. And actually for my CEO, but someone who'd done that before, who'd navigated that in probably a tougher environment, was really useful. And I think actually just being given that validation by a boss is really, really incredible. Yeah. So I think if anyone's in that position that they can do that for someone else, it's a pretty powerful tool.
Yeah. I'm just going to read some stats to you.
Please do. So, I love stats. I actually do, but not as much as Fliss. That's all I'm saying.
This is my key thing. ONS figures show an increase in women dropping out of the workplace between 2021 and 2022, specifically to look after family. Mm. And to put a figure on that, that's 43,000 women who dropped out of the workforce to look after their family, which is a 3% increase on the previous year. And I'm just thinking, why? And they did some digging into this, and actually childcare costs and availability seem like the biggest driver. And also people having to find jobs that fit around their childcare patterns. Mm. I don't know if you have thoughts on this as a working mum. That's a lot of women who aren't in the workforce anymore.
It's a lot of women, and let's note it is the women, often in heterosexual couples, that are still taking on that role. And that is really about the earning power, often between a couple. Look, it's really seriously depressing, but childcare is out of control in this country. The cost of childcare, not the actual childcare, hopefully. The cost of childcare is extortionate. And, you know, I mentioned that I had my mother-in-law helping to begin with, but the rest of it I did with nurseries. Mm. And, you know, at some points you're barely earning anything, but you're trying. For me, I kind of felt that I was keeping my career open. Yeah. And my career was really important to me at that time, and I thought I'm going to have to just suck this up from a cost perspective. But, you know, it's a luxury to be able to afford that, full stop. Most people actually can't, if you look at average salaries versus actually the cost of childcare, certainly on a full-time basis. Mm-hmm. I think also there's another factor going on here, which we are reluctant to talk about, but some people simply don't want to go back to work. They want to spend more time with their children, or they want a more flexible arrangement so they can spend more time with their children. And, you know, I think equality only comes when we can go, that's all right as well. Mm. You know, all the options are yours. But I think women are often outpriced of being able to work. And I think that's got to be one of the biggest things to change in order to have any equality in the workplace.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you're living it right now. Yeah. You know the cost as much as anyone.
I do. It makes my eyes water thinking about it. But again, it is the price I pay. And it is a privilege to be able to do it. But I'm willing to pay that price because my mental health and actually I feel quite strongly that I want to continue working. Mm. Then fine, you know, would I prefer to pay less? Yes. And there are examples.
And you prefer it to be easier. It's hard,
exactly.
Isn't it?
You know, it is hard.
I think some people, you know, have encountered this as a manager as well as with friends, but it is really hard. And I think, again, as women, we're very hard on ourselves. We don't find it easy. But actually we should do, keep punishing ourselves. And actually sometimes you've got to make the call that's right for you at that particular time. But the hope is, I guess, that becomes a more balanced situation that with proper paternity leave, actually, or shared parental leave, with women being paid what they are worth in the workplace, with more flexible working, particularly in some of the more traditional sectors, I think, where flexibility is still quite challenging. Lots of people being called back in on 5 days a week now. It's really tough.
Yeah. In a previous episode, we were talking to Anna Whitehouse, who does the Flex Appeal, about inclusive, flexible working, meaning not just working from home, but actually people also embracing job shares part-time working.
Yeah.
And, you know, the statistics say that working from home is now accepted because we all did it. In most places, it's accepted. You know, people are being called back. But there is still a bad light being shone on job shares and other things that typically
part-time
parents
work,
used to their advantage to help them live a life and have kids.
But also have balance where you want to have balance, right? You know, I worked 4 days a week for, actually I can't even work this out, let's say 8 years, 9 years, through various kind of maternity leave, having children, etc. And that, for me, gave me a level of balance that I really craved because I wanted to see this child. Yeah. You know, I really wanted that time. It was special to me. Even though I would choose to work around it, I wasn't doing that all day. I would try and make that work for me. So I think, you know, there's a huge amount to unpick in that. Some people want to work a 3-day week. They want the balance to be with their home and their family. You know, that's perfectly acceptable. But we don't quite yet live in that world where that is the norm. You know, wouldn't it be amazing to see more job shares happening and amazing recruitment companies launching that really are looking for people who only want to offer those skills for like 2 or 3 days? Because actually that's the benefit of lots of small businesses who can only afford that. So there is a good economical reason why this works as well.
Yeah. In terms of advice, actually, I just wanted to say one of the best pieces of advice I got was from you.
Good.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I remember, I think I met you with Amber and we were in a pub, classic.
Yep, I remember.
And I was saying to you, I think 6 or 7 months will be enough for me. I'm done. You know, I'm not settling into this. And you said, just really take your time and think about it because you don't have to make that decision now. And I ended up taking 10 months, more fool you.
I was happy with you today. 10 months.
Because actually at 6 months and even 7 months, I was just getting into the swing of understanding who I was. Mm. And I don't think enough is spoken about the emotional return to work.
No.
And I don't just mean, do you know what? I did shed a tear when I dropped off at nursery. Not because I missed her, but because it was so weird and awful that she had to be peeled off me on that first day. Yeah. But just the emotions around, I don't know, not understanding who you are anymore. Why aren't I the same person? Why am I not getting on with the same people? Why can't I go out for drinks every Tuesday and just go to a different place? Like,
Your life has changed, right? Your life has changed beyond recognition. And we're talking about work, but in every possible way. And I think, you know, that's why I think American laws are so laughable, because I think you're still, you know, people are going back after weeks when the hormones are still raging.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, you are not yourself, right? In lots of ways. And I think you've been through this huge physical thing. Mm. You've been through this big emotional thing. You're not sleeping. There's a lot of different factors. And for some people, that's going to work and that's going to be great. For a lot of people, it takes time.
Yeah.
And it does take time. And I just don't think you... I can't remember how old your daughter was at the time, but I think it was quite early on. And actually, you were trying to control, I think, to a degree.
Absolutely.
I want to say to you, and I said, well, look, you don't have to do that till 2 months before. That's your legal right to not even get into this conversation. But more, you owe it to yourself to go, how do I feel at that particular point? And what's right for you, you know? And actually, I'm going to be honest, the babies get a lot more fun around 6 months as well.
they do. It's easier. You know, you can go out and do things and they're less unpredictable.
They're responding to you.
Absolutely.
Because that's, I think I said this to you, and I guess if you're asking me about advice, and I have said this before, which is it changes all the time. The stages that your child goes through changes all the time. The childcare you need changes all the time. What you need, how much sleep you're getting, how well you're getting on with parenting changes all the time. And it's just not static. And I think for control freaks like us, that is really difficult.
Yeah.
Because actually, we want to be able to plan and organise. And that's why Gina Ford did so well, right? Because it was like, here's just a prescriptive way of doing it. It doesn't work like that. Oh, that's the only thing I know.
I've got all her books. Doesn't
work.
No, it didn't work for me.
As a friend said to me, I mean, don't know if this is litigious or not, we'll think about that, but she did the Baby Whisperer, and she was like, the Baby Whisperer ruined my life. She told me it was going to be easy.
Yeah,
it wasn't easy. My baby doesn't do these things. Mm. And I think this is it all along. We're all finding our own path, but it is forever forking in different directions. And I think, you know, I think the kindness to yourself is knowing that and not trying to set it in stone and therefore not planning too far ahead at that point.
Absolutely. There have been some really incredible guests before us on this episode, and two things spring to mind. One, Candice Brathwaite said, do not make any decisions in the first 2 years. No haircuts, no house buying, no divorces, unless it's really bad. And that's really stuck with me. And then Toby of Black Ballad said, it's chapters. And you don't give enough credit to the fact that one chapter is your maternity. And that's, there's a lot of weight on that. You're pregnant, it's amazing, everyone loves it, stroke the belly. The second chapter, people talk less about, oh my God, maternity leave, no one's sleeping, fine, we can talk about that. The third chapter is, oh, you just get on with it.
You're back to normal.
Go on, yeah, it's you again.
Except there's a whole other person.
And it's not, it's wild.
Well, I was like, I remember coming back to work that first time and chatting to someone afterwards and just going, nothing changed, did it? Nothing changed, except I grew a human.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was the big changes were all mine, not the rest of the world. Yeah. And I think, you know, we don't allow ourselves to go, my life is totally different now. Mm. So, yeah, big advice is just not getting, as discussed, not getting too far ahead and thinking it's one way all the way. Because actually, I think, again, when thinking about returning, what you might want to return in a gradual basis. Mm. You might not want to go in full throttle. You might be looking for different levels of flexibility. Or you might want to go back full time because that's really important to you and your identity and your finances. You know, there's so many different variables. Yeah. So I guess there's not one way, and that one way will always change, you know, so.
God, that's not what I wanted to hear.
I know, sorry. I tell you what, with the much older children now, I can tell you, it keeps changing. I've got an 11
year old. Can you see the panic in my eyes?
Yeah. Actually, he's 12. I don't even know how old he is. That's how much it changes.
Excellent. So what do we want to find out from our guests today? I think I'm interested in knowing about the decisions and why they've made those decisions. So Alex, who we'll introduce in a minute, has had a couple of mat leaves, and Tash is just returning from her first. And for me, the question I always want to ask women and people who are returning after some time off is, why have you done it the way you've done it? Not because I'm being nosy. Genuinely, I'm interested for my own life, because have I done it right? Or maybe I should be considering something else.
A bit of voyeurism you want to see. Yeah, I'm definitely interested in that. But I guess the question for me is always, how?
Yes.
How are you doing it? Because actually, everyone's circumstances are so different. And actually, I think different challenges, you might think it's tough for yourself, but people are navigating such different routes. But maybe there are ideas to borrow.
Yes.
I'm always interested in very practical tips. That's what I want.
It is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to editor of Stylist magazine and mum of four, Alex Walker, and Stylist's head of digital marketing, mum of one, and Baby on the Brain season one star, Natasha Gandotra, Tash to her friends and me. We all had babies in 2021, just to add a little bit of spice to the pandemic. Alex, I want to start by asking you what your return to work looked like last year, what felt good about it, because you have had four returns to work, right?
I have indeed. Honestly, I am trying to think about each one, and they have merged into one, but I will try with number four. What felt good? I think by four, a lot of the things that I experienced with one, which was nerves, thinking, as Lisa said, am I going to still be very good at this? What will the rest of the team, how will they react to me coming back? Mm. I didn't experience those by number four, because I did know that nothing changes. You go back and you walk in a meeting and the conversations will be about a different topic, but they'll be the same.
Yeah.
So I knew that. I guess I felt very confident in my boundaries around where work and home lived, which I definitely didn't with number one. You know, with my first, you didn't know, you felt that constant guilt that you should be at work or that constant guilt that you should be at home. But over the many maternity leaves, I guess I worked out some probably unwritten rules as to how my home and work life worked. Mm. You know, so I knew I would only ever miss, and this is very personal to me, one bedtime. I always liked to only miss one bedtime. I always liked to, you know, make sure I did one class with them a week, whatever it was, whatever those unwritten rules were. I had worked those out by number four, so I think I felt comfortable. Mm. I was also very lucky in that I could return to work in a way that worked with my life.
Yeah.
That is very rare.
So let's talk about that, because your return has been very different each time, actually, how many hours you've worked, what kind of working structure you've had. So can you share what the different ways of doing it are? Because you have done a few.
I've done many. I have. Return number one was based entirely off of Lisa.
Copying, the only role model, right?
She was my only role model, as you said, Fliss. She was my only role model, so I literally copied her to the T.
I wonder how many people are going to say that on this podcast.
I mean, it's getting awkward,
is it scary?
Tash isn't, because she's got her own route.
So I copied Lisa and I did 4 days return, and my son was in nursery for 3 days and grandparents 1 day, Yeah, it felt very similar to the pace that I was working at before.
Yeah.
Then the guilt of having to leave to go for nursery really.
Yeah, because I think it's interesting. I do want to touch on this because I felt more guilty about work than I did about my children.
Oh, 100%.
When I first came back. Mm. And I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
I was really fully thinking, oh, I'm going to feel terrible about leaving my son, but I'm not going to. These guys, they can fend for themselves. I didn't. I felt awful about not being there sometimes.
Well, I mean, it was very unique working culture at that time. It just, we, you know, it was early on in stylist days, so we were working till very late at night. You know, that was also the culture probably 13 years ago, was longer hours. So for us to pack up at 5:30 felt like you'd done half a day.
Yeah.
That's how it felt, because everybody was sat at their desk at all. Whatever, 8:30, 9 o'clock, and you often had evening events. So to leave at 5:30 felt like you were doing a half day.
Did you get FOMO as well then? Because if everyone else is doing
that,
and there are events like having champagne or like being out with people, I mean, I do now.
Less of the event thing, but to miss out on any, but to miss out on any decision, because you've been so integral to those decisions. I definitely did with that. But you know, I went home. Spent 2 hours with my son, and then I started working again. That was just, you know, that was what you did.
Yeah, we did do that, you're right.
And that, was how it worked. And then I think with number two was probably my most, if I think about work-life balance, was it number two or was it number three?
Number three, wasn't it?
No, it was number two. So number two, I came back and I did a job share with the brilliant Mandy, and I did 3 days a week, and we had a crossover day.
Oh, cool.
And honestly, I have to admit, that worked brilliantly. Mm. We were working on the same projects. We had that day to cross over with one another.
Yeah.
And work-life balance-wise, I felt like I spent loads of time with the kids.
Yeah.
I didn't have to, you know, so much pressure on my family. My family did a lot of childcare for me, which left a constant feeling of guilt for me. And that was just another part of this guilt parcel that you have when you return to work, the guilt to your colleagues, the guilt to your children, and the guilt for always asking for help. That was a real strong theme throughout my first three maternity leaves, that I always felt guilty to someone. But that did really work. Unfortunately, it was a very short return to work because I accidentally got pregnant. So one of the most excruciating moments of my life was messaging Lisa and going, before I return to work, oops, I'm pregnant. And I was mortified.
We were also in a pub when we had that conversation.
Yeah. No, no, you kindly said, let's go to the pub and chat this
That's
through.
That's where I like to go.
Couldn't even have a drink.
I couldn't even have
That's
a drink.
That's for
but,
me, not
but
her.
Honestly, I have to admit, this feels like a bit of a, you know, Queen Lisa. But she was so helpful. To have a boss that you can go, oh my God, I'm pregnant again. And they go, okay, it's not the end of your career. Because it really felt like, for me to take three consecutive timeouts in a short space of time, that it was the absolute end of my career. That was it in my head. And Lisa was like, it isn't, you know, you can work this out. I went back for 6 months, 8 months, really short period of time. And then maternity leave number three came around, and that was when I had three children under four. And I thought, and my husband works away a lot, and I was like, okay, realistically, as much as it pains me, going back and doing a 4 day a week, having four children in, three children in nursery, and the costs of that, and it is just going to be too tricky at this point in my life. So that was when I asked if it was an option to go back in a more peripheral way. So I created a role for myself. I want to pitch why that role was really important, but mainly meant working from home. And I was lucky enough that that was an option at that time. So then I worked more as a, I consulted on a lot of projects that we were working on, different brand projects like Stylist Strong. I wrote a lot more, which was actually lovely as well. And I would edit, come in and edit, cover somebody's holiday roughly once a month. So actually, it worked out really well. But did come with a massive knock to my ego when I'd come into the office to work, to edit, and not understand who you're working, who you're shooting. I wasn't part of that decision. Oh, they're all having ideas and making brilliant issues, and I'm not part of that. And I thought I was key, and actually, no, I'm probably not. That definitely was a swallow my ego for the good of my children, is what it felt like at that point. That's a, that was a funny thing. Because there's often an assumption as well by your everyone that when you work that part-time, as I was doing at that point, that you're not very ambitious. You're like, oh, she's mum now. And you're like, no, I am just as ambitious as I always was. And work is just as important. I think about it just as much. I just have to be very clear of my, you know, what time I've got. You've only got so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
And then number four, very quickly, I was able to come back with three children in school. So massively changes the game in terms of childcare costs. And I have a wonderful nanny who makes me cry when I think about her, because what she's done is she looks after my son, but also because I don't have to ask my family as much, as brilliant and helpful as they are. It has taken away a big portion of guilt when it comes to childcare, which has really helped. And he doesn't cry. Like all the other children just cried their eyes out when they went to nursery without fail every single day for however many years. So that's been lovely.
Oh my God, the emotions of that as well. Dropping your child off and having them cry at nursery is one of the
most horrendous things. Oh, no one prepares you for
that,
do they?
No.
I mean, I'm interested in the guilt parcel.
Yes,
that Alex mentioned. Maybe Tash could tell us a bit about that.
Absolutely.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
What did your return to work look like, Tash?
So I think I was a bit like you, Fliss, that I thought I was going to be back before I actually was. I think I had 10 months in mind. And I was like, yeah, that's going to be me. But we had a bit of a rocky start. So my daughter Margot was born 7 weeks premature. And then we lived in Great Ormond Street for 2 months. She had an operation. There was loads going on. And then we were sort of back and forth to the hospital for a few months. So I reckon like the first 5 months of my mat leave was very chaotic. Mm. So I know that loads of people didn't really get into the flow of it for very long. But for me, I really didn't. Like I was like everyone was talking about nap routines, and I was like, I've got to go here at this time and I can't change it. So I was just like constantly pushing around my buggy, getting on the trains, doing all of this. And yeah, I think it toughened me up, but also I think it was like the last 6 months of my mat leave, I was like properly on mat leave. Like you can go for the coffees, you can do all like the fun stuff. So I ended up doing 12 months. And then I came back and I had loads of holiday accrued because I'd saved a month before when I thought she wasn't going to be 7 weeks premature. And then I had loads of holidays, so I managed to use that as like I took Mondays off. Don't know why I chose Mondays. I think because I quite enjoy working Fridays. And
it's a quieter day.
It's a quieter day. You don't feel like people are like harassing you as much. So I was like, I'm just going to take Mondays and see how that goes. Oh, and also that was her childminder couldn't do Mondays. So I was like, oh, okay, so it's going to have to be Monday then.
Interesting. So part of your decision was actually dictated by your childcare.
Yeah, yeah. And Fridays, actually, yeah, my mum doesn't work Fridays. Mm-hmm. So she looks after Margot every other Friday, and Nick's mum or my sister or Nick's sister is like a bit of a juggle the other Friday. So yeah, it was
a patchwork quilt. That's yeah. what I always say. You've just got all these different, you know, it is the whole it takes a village, yeah. right?
It really does. I wouldn't have been able to come back the way I've come back without like my support network. So I think it was almost to the day, like a year since having her, I came back. And yeah, I had a male manager at the time, but he was really supportive. He's got three kids.
I like the butt. He might have been male, but he was still very supportive of me having a child. I mean,
like, sometimes they might not really understand, especially if they don't have a family, but he's got three kids. So it was really nice and easy coming back in. I felt very eased back in. But then it was our biggest event of the year coming up, Stylist Live. So there was lots going on. There was lots
you
of things.
You had to catch up fast.
Had to catch up fast. It wasn't sort of... oh, you know, have a few coffees here, that kind of thing. It was, right, here's all these really big meetings. Oh, and P.S., we've got to sell loads of tickets.
So how did you balance that then? Because you went from just settling into your mat leave to being like, huh, I'm back. And I know when I came back, I was like, I'm just going to be me again. I'm going to walk into the door of this nice new office, and it's going to be the same team, and it's just going to be me. And I sat down and I was like, oh, I'm not just me, because I'm suddenly getting notifications on my phone that Amber's had a poo at nursery or she's eating a fish finger, and I'm thinking about what train I need to get on, because if I get back at this time I can probably just catch her before she closes her eyes to go to sleep for 2 hours. So I don't know, how did it make you feel that it was so busy, and was that a good thing? Actually,
I think it was a good thing, but at the same time, like, I had this vision of, oh, when I'm at work I'm going to be at work, but it doesn't really, like you said, it doesn't really work like that. Like I think no one told me, anyway, how much kids get sick in that first year.
Yeah, like... I think all the parents, actually, we had a little flurry, didn't we, of pandemic babies. But I guess it's linked to the pandemic and exposure to bugs, but every one of you has had very sick kids through that time.
Oh, yeah, you really have.
I mean, it's like, and that is really challenging, isn't it?
It is.
Tag teaming with your partner, if you have one, trying to make that work. Yeah.
It's challenging in a supportive environment. So yeah, I just wonder what it's like where if you're in a really super, super corporate environment where you're not surrounded by women who go, oh God, yeah, you go do whatever you got to do. I understand you've just thrown up over yourself and the child threw up this morning. Yeah, you need to go and sort that out.
Yeah, but sometimes it's overwhelming when people are nice to you. like you're just like, oh God, they're being so nice about it.
But that's where the guilt comes in, right?
Yeah.
So that's Alex's guilt parcel is... then you feel guilty because you know you have to put your child first, and actually you're also not very well.
Yeah.
But you're letting everyone down because you're not there again, and you haven't really got a good reason, but you have got a good reason. My mind goes at a million miles an hour.
Yeah. So everyone in this conversation has male partners. So I'm going to sort of, you know, stereotype. I'm going to stereotype that's going to happen. But how supportive are your partners in this return? Alex?
I'm going to wager that my husband Matt is never going to listen to this podcast.
I might send it to him on Instagram, find him and send him it.
I tell him how I feel regularly. Yeah, when I returned after my first maternity leave, my husband was still working 120 days abroad every year. So I just couldn't factor him in any way to childcare, and I still can't because of his working schedule. And maths-wise, he earns more money than I do. Mm-hmm. So it when it comes down to that bottom line, in lots of ways, his takes priority. Mm-hmm. It also takes priority because he's freelance, and therefore he doesn't get sick pay, he doesn't get holiday pay, unless he pays it to himself. So he managed to think really carefully about his entire career.
The strategy was incredible.
Because, you know, because of all of those things, it does mean that childcare has always fallen on my shoulders. That's not to say he never does anything. He will look after the children today so that I can work late tonight. But it has meant that with anything, if a child's ill, or it will always be me who picks up that phone call, school will call me, when every single part of that kind of parenting journey, whether it was nursery, now to school, now to trip, to clubs, they would call me if anything.
That's mad in itself, because we put both our numbers down and it's not like
this is a nightmare.
It's not like number one and number two, but they always call me first.
Yeah, it happens at the GP as well. Yeah. So my husband's taken the kids in and they're like, oh, I'll call you back later. I always get the call. Really? I'm like, I'm in meetings. It's like, but it always comes through to me.
Yeah.
And this is it, because I think this is so much, all of these kind of gender stereotypes, those stats you're talking about at the beginning, are all of these things are factors in that. And that's about earning power. It's about how society turns to the mother. It is.
And I think, and I'm almost loath to say this as well, because it plays into a lot of those stereotypes, but I know that the feelings I feel when I leave my children are not the same feelings that my husband feels. You know, I was thinking about that first return to work, and I went in hard as well, like you did, Lisa, but I also went to the toilet and I would look at pictures of my little boy. It would just be a quick, but I'd be like, oh. And I missed him and felt guilty and thought about him and thought, you know, whereas I don't think, that's not to say he didn't love him as much, but I just don't think that.
It's different.
I think my husband certainly could compartmentalise in a different way. And I think,
well, there are hormones, like if you read into hormones and the connections, you know, there's that amazing fact about how during breastfeeding, particularly, like a baby's eyes get wider at his mother. They're having a different connection. It's to do with the oxytocin and like, so you are hormonally connected. And actually, again, I don't think we struggle with the fact that there's a bit of science fighting us in these situations.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that makes us less good at going back to work, because I actually don't think it does. But it just means that we're grappling
different challenges. I don't think it can be used often, though, as an excuse. Like sometimes, like...
No, like, definitely
well, no,
not.
You've got the connection.
I mean, that's nonsense. Yeah.
Like,
she wants you more.
Yeah. Like hearing her cry in the night, like Nick, my husband's like, you can't hear her as much.
Well, that is like, also, there is also science around
that's
that.
What he said.
There is, there actually that's is. Women said. Are programmed to hear their child. Like, and this is it. There is evolutionary biology at play here.
Yeah.
That, so, you know, it's like how we have the ability to go back to sleep after feeding a child in the night, because the hormones are all aiding that. So this is, you know, there's a lot of things. And I think it's right. I think people use it as an excuse to go, well, the mother is bonded with the child and shouldn't be taken away. Like, it's not that. It's just that we are going to feel things that are challenging. And I think it's remiss to ignore that sometimes.
I do too. I think that is, you know, it all plays in. Society definitely makes it difficult for women in a way that it doesn't for men. And there's presumptions around where the childcare should fall. Absolutely. But I also think there is those hormonal pulls. You know, I always think of it as you think of the umbilical cord. There is that attachment to you that never really goes away. And I think that does factor in. And I do think, as you say, it's probably remiss to not... You know, I think we think we should just come in. We shouldn't feel any of these things. We should ignore those feelings. But I don't know if that's helpful or true if we do.
Can I change direction? I've got another question.
Yeah,
is that
absolutely.
All right?
Yeah.
I'm asking my co-host here. But one of the things I'm thinking about, so slightly different tack, but when I've spoken to stylist readers on this topic of returning, a lot of people talk about confidence as being one of the big barriers about returning to work. And we're all talking about a really supportive environment. You know, the fact we can even have these conversations is pretty special and unique. But actually, people feel like they've lost skills. They've lost their ability to stand up and room. They look a bit different. They feel a bit different. I was chatting to someone who'd got a wardrobe consultant and started, because they just sort of didn't feel like them in the workplace. You know, it was like, and I was like, actually, again, the issue of returning is quite complex. We talked a lot about practicalities, but I'm interested to know if either of you have felt that confidence challenge in returning to work.
In terms of the skills, yes. Like, I work in marketing and things are sort of always 100 miles an hour. So it's always like a new platform, a new thing. You should be on this. Oh, this chat bot, that, this. And you're just a bit like, oh, I feel like if you're out for a year in marketing, it feels like you've been out for 10. So there was a bit of like a, oh, I'm coming back into sort of the unknown. But it just does depend on your team, how supportive they are and things like that.
How did you address the skill stuff? So really that's about stuff to learn, isn't it?
I'm subscribed to like 1,000 different email newsletters.
So you just sort of force yourself to learn about it.
I put in like time. It's quite geeky. We call it like Friday learning time with my team. And we do like a couple of hours every Friday where we just try and learn something new.
So did you cut yourself off completely when you were on mat leave though? So,
yeah.
Well, you didn't do Friday
as
learning
much as
time.
As much as you can. So like I was still on Instagram and I was still subscribed to things that I would like more worky things. Mm. And then like you see them pop up and you're a bit like, oh, and then all like TikTok when I was off, like obviously it's been around for a few years, but like really, really blew up. And then it was like, oh, okay, so how are we going to factor this into
So it's still
stylist?
In your brain,
it's still in your brain,
actively choosing to engage with it.
No, I wasn't like, oh, I'm making notes or anything like that, like physically making notes, but you're always thinking about it,
I think. Did it challenge your confidence to be good at your job?
You mean
Did you feel any sort of questions around, can I still do this? Am I good? Do people care?
I think so, because I think listening to what you guys were saying about earlier about like working late and things like that, I think it was, I'd always, if I hadn't got round to what I was doing in the working day, I'd be like, right, I'm going to just log on a bit later or I'll stay till 7 and get that done. Whereas I feel like I have to be better at my job now than I was before because you don't have as much time. Mm. So you're just like, no, I can't actually chat to you for 20 minutes because I've got to do this and I've got to do it now. Well, that's how I feel. I know that lots of people do log on later, but I try not to.
Was that yesterday when I said, will you come on a test run? And she said no. And I was like, okay, I'll go on.
No, I'm busy.
She said, I'm busy. I was like, oh.
I mean, the productivity is interesting because all of the research they're doing at the moment around the four-day week, all of the big four-day week trials, every bit of evidence suggests that a four-day week, we are all more productive because we're all motivated by the additional time off, which obviously for people in flexible working arrangements, which is often the case around children, are having to learn that on their own, really, aren't they? But God damn, you're productive, aren't you? It's like you can do amazing things in that time.
You really can. Yeah.
You don't waste it. I think that's the difference. You don't go on Tesco runs.
to the contrary, actually, I'm like, I can go to Tesco on my own.
Wow. I can revel in walking around these aisles.
Yeah.
She got me a Yorkie bar, so. Thanks
for that. It's all weirdly retro.
I know.
What about Alex? What about you? You mentioned that you were touching a bit on this earlier about confidence, particularly when you're more distance from that. Have you felt your confidence affected after periods not working?
I actually, I was thinking what you were just saying. I did remain fairly tapped in during every maternity leave in the sense that my job is also my passion and I love magazines, I love reading. So I did constantly do what I'd always done, which was think of ideas, I probably sent Lisa lots of annoying, this would be a good nature idea. She's like,
it's a really interesting thing that people do, and one of the things speaking as a manager, you know, is that someone's struggling when they start doing that. Because they're not, they are going, don't forget me, don't forget me, don't forget me. And I think there's a way of staying connected, wanting to be useful, wanting to be valuable.
I had, and I think I've talked about this with you before, a weird period after having the first three children where it was almost like my hormones went insane, and that manifested as me feeling like I had a million ideas and I had to launch a million businesses.
Yeah, you would do, yeah.
And I, honestly, I remember 2 months in thinking, right, let me launch a blog and a this and a that. I really had that not by number four. I was really tired then and just watched Grey's Anatomy. But for the first three, I had massive aspirations of what I could achieve. Yeah. And if I look back now, I think they were almost fairly manic periods, really. And maybe that was inside me trying to remind myself that I was still...
I still had an identity.
I was still good. And then, so I didn't hugely suffer confidence-wise, actually, when I returned to work. And especially as returns increased, because I felt more, I was more and more aware of how I think having a child makes you more capable.
We've talked a bit about, I think all, certainly I've had this conversation with Bliss and Alex, but it's about perspective as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the ability to go, that's done, I'll park it here, I'm moving on.
Really does.
Rather than emotionally hanging on to things, because actually you've got a child at home. Actually, that's way more important than anything that's happening.
The speed at which I learned to make decisions compared to before. Yeah. The speed at which I could write and edit, all of those things increased massively. And so I could see that happening. So actually, in that sense, I was like, okay, I can see a skill that I've actually got
here.
Yeah, and I could see that. However, when I was no longer within the centre of things, I certainly, my confidence wavered then.
I think I had quite a lot of anxiety with how I'd left my job.
Because
it was so sudden. It was like, I hadn't as much as given a password to anyone. Like, I remember it was just like, I had a meeting and then on like 6 p.m. the night before, and then by 6 a.m. she was born.
It's very stressful.
I mean, not that.
Obviously, it's very stressful from your baby's perspective, but actually you forget all the excess stuff around that.
It was like, so I had half done a handover, but I'd been through with my manager sort of the strategy for the next year, but there was notes on it that I had to sort of explore and change, and we hadn't presented it to our CEO at the time.
It's like work nesting.
Yeah.
Like, you hadn't been given the opportunity to like wrap up and tie a bow on it and say goodbye.
Yeah, and I remember the first text I sent, I've only just remembered this actually, after I gave birth, was to my team saying, hi there, not going to be in today because I've had a baby. But I was just like, no one would have known, and I knew they'd be worried.
Yeah, you're not here.
And so I was like half drugged up after this weird C-section experience that I'd had, and I was like, it was like 7:30 a.m. and it was on, I don't even know if I had then, it was on Slack. I logged onto Slack and just messaged them, and I was just like, I'm not gonna be in, I've had a baby. And then I remember Ella emailing, our CEO emailing me being like, oh gosh. And then I was trying to say, oh, I'll try and check in a couple of weeks about this.
Is that when the Oromorph hit? You were like, another shot of Oromorph.
And she was like, no, darling, just enjoy, just look after yourselves. And that was really nice to hear. Obviously, she wasn't going to say anything else, but it was just like the anxiety of how I'd left it. Then I forgot about that for a bit. And then as I was coming back, I was like, what's it going to be like? Yeah. No one had my password. No one knew anything. So, yeah.
I wonder if the anxiety of returning is worse than the return.
Oh, 100%. Definitely. Because you play yourself in your own mind. You make up scenarios and think. And it is about...
And you're cruel to yourself in a way that you aren't to others, aren't
awful.
You?
So. Awful to yourself. Absolutely. So... one of my final questions, I think, is what the best piece of advice you could give anyone was. Anyone listening who's thinking about their return to work and any info you could give.
I'd probably say take everything one day at a time, because each day is different and throws lots of new challenges at you. So at the start of each day, I don't know if this is healthy or not, but me and my husband sit there and we talk about who has the most important day.
Sounds like a competitive relationship.
Yeah, it's, and it's just like, so that means that if something happens with Margot, like if we have to go and get her or something, it's like your day trumps that person's day. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of then work forward from there. So today I was like, doing a podcast with Fliss. So if anything happens, like with nursery calling, you're on call for that.
I think that's a good idea, actually. Yeah. I think probably it's not a conversation enough couples have where they lay out, because you're always caught out, aren't you? So
yeah,
and smart, I like that.
Yeah. Alex?
Yeah, I have two things. One, I think, which is something I've thought every time I've returned, which is there is 3 months settling in period. Mm. And those 3 months, I wouldn't even consider them. It's a little bit like the first 3 months of having a baby, where you just
or a new job for that matter.
Or a new job, exactly. Those 3 months, don't make any rash decisions. Don't think that that's a reflection of what it's going to be like or how you're going to feel or how anybody's going to respond to you, because it takes 3 months for your team to adjust to you, for you to adjust it to the situation, for your childcare to feel normal. And I think those periods happen after every maternity leave. So that would be one. And then the other one, which is something that I have thought more about with each subsequent maternity leave, is to really think about what will work for you. And, you know, you can look at other people, but actually what works for you, your lifestyle, how you like to parent, your childcare, and put in some, I don't want to use the term of the moment, but boundaries around how things will work for you, and then try to stick to them. And I think knowing what works for you, communicating it to your team and to your boss, if you can, lets everybody know, okay, I will work late on a, I always worked late on one day a week. That was my working late day because I knew my husband would take over. That's where I would sit at my desk for hours, and I didn't mind that because I knew I had that day. I think knowing your boundaries, knowing what's going to work for you rather than looking at how everybody else is doing it, and sticking to it makes you feel more comfortable and takes a little of the guilt sandwich away.
Thank you so much to our guests, Alex and Tash. They were
so good.
So good. I see them around the office all the time, but you never get to have that in-depth conversation.
No, I mean, actually, I knew some of Tash's story and background, and actually, but we've never really got into that depth. And the thing that was actually really striking me as she was talking is the stuff people go through. And you know, and actually, then we all get back on our feet. And it is, you know, resilience is forced upon us sometimes. Yeah. Like, you have no choice. And how different that journey can be and what we're all dealing with. And I think it's really good to keep that in mind sometimes when we're generalising.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually something you said to me recently stays with me is that you never know what people are doing before they get to work. Mm. And especially for parents who have done almost like Alex getting 4 kids ready before she comes
at
to work.
School,
trumps me getting on a train saying goodbye to one child. Do you know what I mean? Like there are different challenges there. What was your key takeaway? I think mine was a really small one. Mm. Actually, Alex said, I only miss one bedtime in a row. Mm. And I have never thought about that before. And today I will be missing, it'll be number 2 in a row.
Yeah.
And I just hadn't thought about it. And for me, that boundary, it might not be right for me, but it was really interesting that she's actually thought about that and that is a rule for her.
Yeah, I liked the rules, actually. I liked Tash talking about, I mean, I feel they're competitive, I'm not going to lie, but, you know, talking about who has the most important day.
It's my day.
But I think those communications, whether they're, you know, that's a commitment to yourself or a commitment with your partner, if you're in a relationship with someone else or co-parenting, actually being really explicit is really useful. Actually, I don't think I do that. I think I assume a lot of things. And that leads to some confusion and disarray. The other thing I'm struck on, but I don't have the solution to, is guilt. Mm. And I just, you know, we spend too much time feeling guilty for things that are slightly outside of our control. And we've talked about this recently, but let's try and control what we can control, take control of the bits, feel emotion for the bits that are ours and park the rest. They're really not very useful to us. And I know that's so brilliantly idealistic and hard in practice. But, you know, in truth, I felt a lot of guilt to my team and to my children. So I felt like I was sort of doing a bad job in both ways. Mm. In hindsight, I wasn't. And I can say that 12 years on now. I have a great relationship with my son and a great relationship with my team. And I proved that I can do that job in 4 days a week. They were unnecessary emotions. And I think finding methods to park them actually would do us all a lot of favours, because actually it allows us to go, when I'm in work, I'm in work. When I'm at home, I'm at home.
Yeah.
But again, that goes to boundaries again, I guess, as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you. It's been a pleasure and a joy.
Well, that's all for this episode of Baby on the Brain, The Returners. You can tweet us at Stylist Magazine, find us on Instagram and use the hashtag #StylistBabyOnTheBrain. And remember to subscribe, share and leave us a review on the App Store. We're taking a short break and we'll be back with part two of Baby on the Brain, The Returners later this spring. In the meantime, why not join us over on Stylist Extra and get access to exclusive content from sex to relationships, friendships to careers advice from just £2.99 a month. Search stylist.co.uk/extra for more information.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.